This is Nick Tamaro joining you for another Sunday edition of the Lone Star Park podcast, where we preview the players' pick five, 12% takeout on that bet. It will begin in race six on today's sequence. And I'm very excited to have a guest that has not joined our network, and I'm excited to be the first one to have him. George Bryant joining me. George Bryant is a member of the Texas Thoroughbred Association board, a horse owner, a podcast host. I probably could list a few more sets of credentials, but I'll let him do some of it. George, how you doing?
What's going on, man? Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's not often that people can listen to a podcast with two guys from Texas under 40. You're younger than me, but talking about horse racing. So I guess we should each respectively bring up our background. People have probably heard it enough from me. So how did you get into racing?
I was born into it. I didn't pick the horse racing life. The horse racing life picked me. When I was young, my dad was a jockey. We grew up all around the country. He was riding quarter horses back then. And it's funny actually how my parents met. My dad was a little jockey, and my mom's stepdad, who was raised her, was like a small-time gangster bookie. And he wanted information from my dad and kind of pawned my mom off on him. And, you know, 9 months later, you got me spit out selling tip sheets everywhere.
That's the best. I tell everybody, and they look at me funny, and if they get to know me better, they realize it's true that you meet the best people at the racetrack. And even if they're not the best people, they have the best stories. They have the best backgrounds. It's just something that you're not going to get in everyday walks of life. So, you live now in the Dallas area, right?
Yes, I live in Fort Worth. I have a house in Fort Worth, but Lone Star is my home. I'm probably there 4 or 5 days a week. So, yeah, it's my second home.
Great place. I mean, we talk about it. I bring it up every week with every guest and ask them, of course, if they have been to Lone Star. I grew up in Dallas, moved to Houston right before high school, came back and went to college in Dallas. I worked as a mutual clerk at Lone Star for a year as a college student. And I tell everybody it is such a jewel. I mean, it's such a beautiful track and such a great place to get to. And so I strongly encourage anybody, and have been for a while, to get there this weekend. But obviously, if you can get there at any point moving forward, that is the right thing. Those of us that go all the way back to Trinity Meadows remember driving all the way to Trinity Meadows to watch racing there. Did your dad ever ride there?
No, he was a trainer by then. He was too big to be a jockey by then.
Okay. But
yeah, I grew up in Trinity Meadows. Trinity Meadows was probably where I've done the most gambling in my life, and I was like a baby. If anybody remembers a trainer, now he runs M&M Racing Stables, but a guy named Cody Autry, he was my childhood best friend. And me and him just grew up just tearing up pick threes and daily doubles and exactas back then.
That's hilarious. Yeah, there aren't a ton of people around that know it. But yeah, my dad and I were there on opening day at Trinity Meadows. He had taken me to the fairgrounds about a year or so before that, and I was dying to get back to the track. My parents are from New York originally, so they were my mom not so much, but my dad was a racetrack type and couldn't believe when he moved to Texas that there wasn't any racing. So right. we lived in DeSoto, and so you know how far that is
from
Trinity Meadows. Yeah, it was a trek, but we made it probably 3 to 4 times a week. There were a lot of afternoons where I got out of school at 3:15 and we were in the car and we just missed first post, but we would be there for the rest of the card and whatever was simulcasting. It was a fun place. Sad to see, of course, that it's been knocked down in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And they're building an apartment complex there in Willow Park, which it seems like they finally have found in terms of suburban life.
Yeah, it's sad. I drove by it probably 4 or 5 years ago and took a bunch of pictures. I have a bunch of pictures of it. I mean, it was all old and dilapidated at that time, but I still have those on my computer to this day.
Yeah, fun place. I remember our first round of simulcasting they did was Bandera and Louisiana Downs. And so you had to really grow accustomed to betting those. And then they did winter simulcasts of Santa Anita, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, and Fairgrounds. So I've always loved that time of year with the offering. It was a fun place. Well, Trinity Meadows is in the rearview mirror. Lone Star is here and now. So let's get started on this pick five sequence. We will touch on, we'll just talk in some generalities about Monday's card. Obviously, there'll be a podcast out with myself and Pete and Spencer for Monday's card, which I think we're going to do tomorrow. I'm going to try to cajole them along as much as I can to get it out. But Sunday's pick five starts in race six, again, a 10 race card. We get started, George, with a 1 mile optional claiming starter allowance event. And you know, we're going to talk obviously throughout this sequence about Steve Asmussen, as he has a few favorites on the morning line, including Elitch, who looks to be a relatively short price here kicking it off. What did you think of Elitch in this sixth race overall?
I mean, Elitch is obviously the horse. If you look, he had raced against Millwood his last race, but since then Millwood has went to Louisiana Downs twice to win. So Elitch has kind of been sitting here waiting while Millwood has been gallivanting across the Texas Louisiana borders, getting a couple W's.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I mean, I just kind of think it sets up really well for them with the Atomic Candy and Quatine kind of knocking heads early. But I think I would take a pass, and I like Atomic Candy in this race. I just think the horse is better. And Sarah Davidson, if y'all know who Brent Davidson is, that's his daughter. She's, like me, has been in the game for a very long time, her whole life, and she does really, really well.
I agree. I think this is an underrated barn. And this horse has an advantageous running style for the race, too. It looks as if, I mean, Ernesto Valdez-Jimenez, I think, is one of the better front-end riders and just doesn't necessarily get the caliber of mounts that some of his peers do. I guess the concern that I had as far as the pace went was whether there would be enough for Elitch, because Elitch, of course, likes to do his best running from off of it. And, you know, every week I talked to CJ about this last week and any guest I've had prior, you're making decisions on what to do with some of these really high percentage barns like Asmussen and Broberg, who are going to hit at a 20%+ clip. But a lot of times they're playing the claiming game very effectively. And that means that you have to strike while the iron's hot. That's exactly what Broberg's done with Millwood, now having run him. This would potentially be his third start in 13 days. So I was willing to take a little bit of a pass there. I was surprised he was a bigger price on the morning line than G's Turn, even though he beat him pretty handily. I don't know if maybe Rick Lee thought that Millwood might not run back. I think Rick does an excellent job with the morning line. So
he does.
Yeah, we'll see. I thought Atomic Candy was interesting enough to use. I would say that I'll probably use the obvious horses, Millwood and Elitch, as main runners, but we'll definitely include Atomic Candy probably as more of a backup. Is this a situation for you? And feel free, of course. I mean, we're talking about pick fives. This is something I tweeted about quite a bit yesterday, because there's been a big ticket construction and ticket structure debate on Twitter for quite some time. Are you generally more of a one ticket kind of guy, try and punch it a number of times, or you kind of use the ABC methodology? What's your preferred approach?
No, I usually play multiple tickets. A lot of times I'll play multiple tickets, but if there's a sequence that has a lot of wide open races, then I'll obviously spread. I just kind of take it case by case. Everyone who I talk to, and they say they have just one methodology, it always kind of leaves a sour taste in my mouth, because I kind of structure my tickets on whatever I believe the sequence to be. If the sequence is going to be chalky, then I'm going to play a $5 or $10 pick five and see if I can pop it. I just try to utilize as much capital out of the race as possible. And if it's going to be every race has 12 horses in it, I'm going to play one 50 cent ticket for, I don't know, $500, $600, $700, $800. I'll play a big ticket if I think it's going to pay a lot. Something is happening outside. Do you hear that?
I do. I was going to say, as long as it's not happening inside, then no, I'm not as
I live in Fort Worth. I live in close to downtown Fort Worth, so it can get wild.
Yeah, it was definitely. I have stayed at the Hilton in Fort Worth quite a few times on my day job assignments. So, yeah, it's certainly loud. I actually just moved into we built a house, and so if you hear a fire engine coming around here, there aren't that many homes in the area. It will be a much bigger cause for concern. luckily we're not worried about what's going on with you, but no, I agree. I think the sentiment is excellent that, you know, you have to, I think, taking hard and fast approaches to things. And, you know, we could get into a really long conversation about this, and it probably will at some point. We'll have, you know, people like you on to talk about it. But if you're taking one approach to every sequence that you play, you're backfitting it, in my opinion, and you're trying to take horses and situations and fit them into a structure that has to exist organically, if that makes sense. You know, you're making it much more difficult than it is. And I mean, hell, it's hard to hit multi-race bets, and anybody that thinks that it's not is just being very foolish. And it's very hard to consistently hit them over time and make money. So I think there are, I mean, I know I've hit very lucrative pick fives using the ABC structure. I've hit them using betting a $36 caveman ticket. You know, I've certainly had both occur, and you let the situation dictate itself. So I agree. So this is a situation, do you think, and we'll talk more about it more at the end of the sequence as we go back through it. Let's move on to race seven, which is a $4,000 claimer, kind of the bread and butter of at Lone Star Park. This is the bottom of the claiming ranks, but these horses generally are the old warriors. This looked like another spot where we're seeing a lot of the high percentage trainers, the principals at this meet, Deodoro, Broberg, pretty well represented, as well as Asmussen. What were your thoughts here, George?
I mean, it's hard to get around any of those in this race. I only pretty much see those winning, but and maybe the Greg Green horse on the outside, Aquam, who has a lot of back class, but it's obvious by his last couple races he probably has some problems. But Aiden Green, I don't know if they're brothers or they had to be related somehow, but he had a very good meet at Oaklawn. This horse comes over here and he doesn't have any works over the track and he's a short price. So this is kind of a horse I think I would toss. I mean, just kind of looking at everything, taking everything into perspective. Rocco's Will of Asmussen's is probably going to be on everyone's ticket. I think he kind of had it all his own way last time. And then a question mark with Dino's Cape. First off, the claim with Carl, I mean, he claimed him like 9 days ago. And but that's what Carl does. That's what he does. But I love Dino's Cape in this race. I mean, he would probably be my main horse. And I'd probably take I always love horses stretching out. I just always kind of have. And I think it stems from my quarter horse roots. Anytime you see a hook race, the horse's first time around the hook, that was like one of my angles. So I think I've kind of just morphed it into thoroughbreds. Now horses that are been going one turn that look like they might be able to take two turns, I kind of like to use them. So I like the Deodoro horse attain success as well.
It's funny that you say that. This will show you and anybody who listens a lot about me. When I was young, I would save the racing forms because I loved to bet the horses going from 400 yards to 770 at Trinity Meadows, especially if they had inside posts. It felt like they just shot out of the gate and would get to the hook the first, and that was really all that you needed. So yeah, I totally agree. And I think the sentiment is good when you have an inside post, especially going a mile at Lone Star. It's not a particularly short run to the first turn, but it's short enough to really give you an advantage, especially when some of the major players are towards the outside. Yeah, I neglected to mention Aquam in kind of previewing the field, but the optics on this are really, really bad. I mean, Broberg claimed this horse off of M&M, and of course, Broberg is one of M&M's trainers. The horse ran a very poor race after being claimed for 6250, albeit against much better, and is now in for four. So, I mean, this looks like the Greens respectively realizing they made a big mistake claiming this horse. And yeah, to me, you're just supposed to run from him at 5-2 or so. And I agree with the thought that Rocco's Wheel certainly made all last time, but did have things kind of go his way. That was also probably a weaker group of horses from top to bottom. It was a beaten claimer, but you know, some of the major players in here are doing different things class-wise. Dino's Cape is moving up off of Three Life, but was claimed that day and fits well at the class level, I would say. Looks to have the right kind of running style as well. And, you know, depending on which half Broberg ends up running, I don't think Tiz Showbiz is necessarily incapable of winning. His problem, of course, is that of late, he's been a little bit fonder of finishing second and third. I thought that, and I love this barn. I think the objective might be a little bit too much, but Kevin Scholl was very, very good at Sam Houston over the winter. I make the morning line at Sam Houston and completely missed on a couple that the public really nailed. And I noticed that early on, made myself a note, and he's continued to do well at Lone Star. So I thought maybe Cowboy Bling might be one that could offer a little bit of value in what ends up being a pretty competitive race. I think this is one where we're probably both going to have a few horses on the ticket. Do you think?
I agree. And Kevin Scholl is a great guy. He, for those of you that don't know, he is Danny Pish's old assistant. So he comes from the Danny Pish school. He knows what he's doing. He's a sharp guy. So yeah, I definitely agree on Kevin Scholl.
Yeah, for sure. Seems to have a limited stable too. So I mean, one of those guys that, you know, we've definitely seen as the racing product has improved so much in Texas the last couple of years. We've seen some of these guys that are very astute claimers at least be able to expand their barns and have quite a bit more success. So yeah, good, fun, competitive seventh race. We'll move on to the eighth Texas Bred Maiden Special Weight event at 6 furlongs. And, you know, one of the things about Rick Lee, the morning line maker at Lone Star, is that his background in part is as a clocker. And he made My Baby Blue 3-1. Obviously, the favorite is likely to be Gidget off the long layoff for Asmussen. But I'm guessing that Rick has seen my baby blue train and feels like the public is going to notice that this horse with a relatively modest pedigree, but some pretty sprightly workouts is going to get a pretty decent amount of support.
I don't know what an Eduardo Cruz is, and I'm really familiar with Texas guys. I don't know him. I do like the fact that it's a 4-year-old going against a couple horses that I do like that are 3-year-olds. To me, a first time starter, and I don't know JM Vasquez. I'm just not familiar with him. So I think this horse will be off most of my tickets, even with the multiple bullets. I do know one horse in this race. It's the 4-horse Woohoo. My dad had this horse last year as a 2-year-old, and she was not precocious. She is a giant filly. She's probably 16-2, every bit of 16-2. She's a very big filly. He sent her home, and it looks like she came back at Prairie Meadows, and she ran a really, really solid race for Kenny Smith up there. She may have grown up, and I know this filly has some talent, so I believe Woohoo will be on the majority of my tickets. Even though she's a 3-year-old, I just know that last year she wasn't precocious, and it looks like she may have grown into her giant frame, and the light's kind of coming on, if you know what I'm saying. And then the other one is Gidget is probably will be on everyone's ticket, if not a single. But I would probably use those two. And then I don't think I would probably reach anywhere else in this race. Maybe Kylie's Two Socks for Bob Young. If anyone knows Bob Young, he's an old time trainer, been around a long time. And this horse is okay. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure she's a half to a couple of nice horses. Let me look right here. I just remember that mare. Yep, she's a half to Hard Case, who made about 100,000, and Rumpole. Rumpole was a Texas bred stakes horse here for a while. So I probably would just use those three. And then if I was going to like have a caveman ticket, I think is what they say when you have like a $5 one or whatever, I would probably just use Woohoo and try to really pop them.
Yeah, I think it's certainly is a spot where if you take a stand, you can benefit from it because it's, you know, relatively not necessarily a complicated race, but one where you're going to get some value if you have a negative opinion on Gidget. So Jose Miguel Vasquez, the rider of My Baby Blue, is 1-91 in his career. The one win actually came on closing night at Sam Houston in April. So it is, and obviously he's 0-19 at Lone Star on the year, at least at the time that I downloaded my PPs. So I guess he's 2-52 now, at least according to Equibase. But according to Equibase, he's 1-91 lifetime. So I don't know where the difference in stats come in. But either way, I mean, he's not a high percentage jockey. This is a barn that's very, very small time. And again, I mean, the tricky thing, of course, from a multi-race perspective, not necessarily the pick four, but the pick five, is that you're not going to see anything into this race in terms of whether she might be taking money in the double or anything like that. But Gidget, who we discussed or who you mentioned, of course, is coming back off a lengthy layoff. This was a horse that was ridden a couple of times by Steve Asmussen's son, Keith, when he was riding last summer. I think that his riding days are behind him now, having seen him with Superstock a few times. I think I'm one to talk about him being a little too heavy to ride, but he looks like he's a little bit beyond the 120 or so. You mentioned obviously Woohoo is a horse that is getting her first opportunity against Texas breds. This is a situation similar to Crescendo Bling last time, who kind of, you know, theoretically dropped in class going from open company at Oaklawn into Texas bred company and took a step back in terms of buyer speed figure, but ran a competitive race and looks to fit well at this class level. Do both to meet Crescendo Bling and Woohoo. I didn't have much of an opinion here. I kind of thought it was a tough race. I thought the Kylie's Two Socks, who you mentioned, didn't have the cleanest of trips last time, looked to be a little bit dangerous, was hopeful that being drawn outside would probably help. She, I don't think, really benefited from being down towards the rail, ran better when outside in those first couple of races at Sam Houston. So yeah, this was one where I would probably be using a few. But as you said, if you have a good opinion on a horse like Woohoo and she can come through, you can really create a lot of value.
Agree. Mm-hmm.
Moving on to the ninth, this is a $25,000 optional claimer at a mile once around the Lone Star Park main track. And again, we're going to be talking about Asmussen and Deodoro and Broberg, who have the three morning line favorites. What do you think here, George?
I mean, everybody says I don't like chalk, but I kind of really like Secret Courier in this race. Bodie's Maker, who beat him at Oaklawn, loves Oaklawn and is very in great form every time he goes to Oaklawn. And then Shake Me Up is, I want to say it's Peter Millers, who he had just claimed and ran a bang up race that day. And I just like Secret Courier. I just think this horse is really nice. And I love that Deodoro brought him here. Some of his horses, he doesn't have works over the track. And this horse had two really strong works over the track. I just really like Secret Courier. And I mean, I might use Tap It Wise, but those are my main two. Mr. Production literally just ran last week. I don't know if he'll go here. I mean, I wouldn't think so. Secret House might be on a ticket if you want to spread a little bit, seeing if he gets loose on the lead. But that's really not Cabrera's style. Cabrera doesn't like being on the front. He likes to sit a little bit off of him and make one run. So, I mean, it'd be Secret Courier for me on all of my A tickets for sure.
Yeah, it looked to me like Secret Courier was in probably the most advantageous spot, either being in position to get the lead if Cabrera defers, as you said, is likely, or sitting right outside, which I didn't necessarily think would be the biggest problem. I guess stretching out you'd prefer. I mean, I always say I prefer speed horses that I bet to be on the lead rather than stalking. And you know, certainly the races that this horse has run since he was claimed from Brian Corner to me are, they're just very, very solid. It's tough to argue. You talked about some of the competition he's faced and I mean, in terms of any speed figure, he's been very, very tough for a lot of these horses to handle. Tap It Wise obviously was highly regarded early in his career. And I remember back on Louisiana Derby Day in 2019 when he broke his maiden, there was hope that maybe he might be able to be kind of a late candidate on the Derby trail, and that just never panned out. And he did run better last time and has run better in his last two starts. He'd really benefit, of course, if the two secrets to his inside battle in the opening stages. He'll be there kind of waiting in the wings. But I felt like, I agree, Secret Courier is a horse that I think in this sequence you'd probably really want to lean on, likely being in a good spot stretching out in distance. So that's a race I think you can handle. It's relatively simple in the ninth, a good featured event on the 10 race card. And that takes us to the nightcap, Texas Spreads going 7.5 furlongs, fillies and mares on the turf course. And weather is expected to be good both Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Might be a little few showers in the afternoon, but after doing 2 weeks in a row of these Sunday shows with races taken off the turf, it's nice to be able to talk about the turf. And we've got some horses moving to the turf, some that have been on the turf. What did you end up with here?
This is a wide open race. I Mike Netherland, who's a friend of mine, he's a good guy. He has the 4 and the 5. The 5 looks to be the prohibitive favorite. A Texas bred Kitten's Joy, which this horse will obviously be the overwhelming favorite, being Kitten's Joy first time on the turf. And he missed the spot earlier that we talked about, which she probably would have been the favorite in that too. So he has to believe she's going to move up on the turf. So Kitty's Queen, the 5 horse with David Cabrera, Mike Netherland, he's been knocking on the door. He's had 14 starts here with 5 seconds and 3/3. He's been right there every time. But he's not a bad – he's the guy who – do you remember the horse Kip DeVille?
Oh, absolutely. I was at the Breeders' Cup when Kip DeVille won the mile. He was the original trainer, right?
Yeah, he is the original trainer of Kip DeVille, so I mean, he knows what he's doing. And he got Mr. Moneybags, if anybody knows Texas Racing, that guy, you know, he had him too. But this horse is overwhelming the horse to beat. I mean, it's by Kitten's Joy out of a Langfuhr mare. It's Texas bred. It's going to be the best Texas bred turf combo you can probably have. You know, if that horse doesn't win it, I mean, good luck. You know what I'm saying? You're gonna have to have 9 of them, because it's just a lot of others that are kind of reaching. I know his other horse, Mrs. Crinkles, the 3-year-old by Texas Bling, out of a mare named Espresso Candy. My dad had her, and I know she broke her maiden 5 furlongs on the turf. And this horse's first race on the turf was pretty solid. Looks like she just kind of got tired there at the end. But I couldn't get creative if I don't single the 5. So I would probably go about 9 deep, you know, if you don't think the 5 can get there. I just don't have any strong opinions on anything else.
Yeah, I think it was easy to reach that conclusion. I mean, that was good horseman's perspective that, you know, if this horse was in the 8th race, the Kitty's Queen that we're talking about, she'd probably be 2-5 because that's a particularly thin Texas bred maiden special weight race, and she's run races on the dirt that would just, that really tower over what she'd face in that field. So, yeah, six siblings to try the turf, none are winners. The dam was 0-for-2 on the turf, but again, the Kitten's Joy influence, pretty significant. Yeah. None of the sires on any of those progeny, those siblings to try the turf, were at the caliber of Kitten's Joy. I mean, going through the field, looking at other possibilities, Amante de Sara, who's towards the outside in the 10 post for Jaime Castellanos, second off a claim. The dam was a two-time turf winner. From a very limited sample, El Amante progeny are 14%, first time on the turf. This is a horse that's going to be a pretty big price. And all things considered, I thought she ran a kind of a sneaky improved race last time. So it might not be the worst idea to throw a horse like that in.
I remember that mare. Yeah, Jay. I remember that mare.
Yeah, she was not.
I want to say Danny Pitch had her.
Joe Strauss Homebred, of course, who's a state senator, perhaps from.
No clue. If it has anything to do with politics, I'm out.
Yeah, no, I don't definitely. Well, especially because we know how things go in general with politics. But, Yaya Jay was trained by Danny Pish, was originally, I think, was taken off a trainer change in 2014. But was 6-for-43 lifetime, just earned 65,000. Of course, we're talking about a vastly different purse structure in Texas when this horse was running as opposed to now. But, there was a little, you know, she was a turf sprinter, as you said, won a 2 life on the turf at Lone Star relatively early in her career, finished second in a 1 other than on the turf at Sam Houston going long. So, I mean, there's a little bit of turf there in the family tree. And I did not look at the second family. The second dam was a horse named Cappuccina, who ran for James Hudson back in the late 90s. So yeah, a little bit of turf pedigree there. Go Wit Go is one door to the outside. There's not as much turf pedigree there, but this is a horse that is coming off a good race, having been run down late at 8-to-1, going a mile, stretching out in distance that day.
143.
Yeah, they were really rolling. It was a muddy track that day, but they went fast early. But boy, they really crawled late. So
what about this
tough spot
out of an English Channel mare? I mean, if we're grasping at straws, I mean, this horse maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, Grasshopper, 6% turf sire, changed the channel, was a turf winner actually. So there's a little bit of turf influence there. She wired a 1.25 mile allowance race at Santa Anita back in 2014 for Sean McCarthy. I did not look up the second family on this one either. But again, I mean, if we're drilling into it this much, I mean, we've definitely run the risk of just having to recalibrate our thoughts and say, yeah, we probably should just make it simple and use Kitty's Queen.
I agree.
But the vacuous hole of getting involved in turf pedigrees and in races with, you know, relatively cheap horses is it's one that can suck you in, and it's probably a bit of a fool's errand. At least that's the approach that I'm going to take with it. But
I agree.
So that'll be Kitty's Queen will basically round out our tickets. I'm also, you mentioned Mrs. Crinkles, the other Mike Netherland trainee. I actually thought her lone turf race down here was good enough to be a very competitive and I imagine Lane Luzzi will be somewhat aggressive. There doesn't look like there's going to be any early foot to this horse's inside when they come out of the gate. So no reason why they can't kind of try and win the race to the first turn and maybe back the pace down a little bit from there.
Yeah, I agree. A horse could get dangerous if loose on an easy lead.
Exactly. So let's go back through this sequence and I will write the numbers down so that the listeners can have a little handy matrix.
What about the three horse fancy all the time, J.R. Caldwell? It's a Temple City and it's a 4-year-old. I mean, that horse, if you want to spread a little bit, may be worth kind of throwing on your tickets. But other than that, I don't really see a lot else.
Yeah, I said we talked about this last week, CJ and I, about Caldwell and the year that he's having in 2021. It's been incredible. And I wondered if maybe he was really set up to, you know, to fire at Sam Houston and if things would go as well at Lone Star. And it looks as if they have. The combination, especially with Goncalves, has been incredible. He's using Bethany Taylor here, but this is a barn that's been very, very good now all throughout the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they won one yesterday, a 2-year-old race. Bethany Taylor to the front, didn't stop. Looked good.
Easiest way around there at 4.5 or 5, right?
Agreed, yep.
So now we're going to go back through the sequence and just kind of give you our best ideas. So in the first leg, which is race number 6, you're leaning on the 1 in this spot, correct? Atomic Candy?
Yeah, and then the 4-5 as well, yeah.
Okay. And then myself in there, I'm going to use the 4 and 5 and the 1 as a backup. And then in race number 7, which we felt like was a relatively competitive $4,000 claimer. Your main horses are?
The 1, 4, and 7.
1, 4, and 7, right? A little bit more of an opportunity to spread there. We both kind of had a negative opinion on the 8. Are you going to use anybody in kind of a backup fashion there, or do you, you're just going to roll with the 1, 4, and 7?
I'm just going to roll with those, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it felt similarly. Those seemed like the 3 to me as well in going through it. Race number 8, the Texas Breds on the Dirt. This is where your biggest opinion in the sequence comes with Woohoo.
Yeah, the 4, the 6, and the 8, but I'll probably lean on the 4.
All right. Yeah, I thought that this was I'm definitely going to have the 4 and 6. I'm going to use the 2 a little bit and just see if maybe these workouts pan out. I'll use the 7 and 8 as backups. Moving on to race number 9. This is where you felt very strongly about Secret Courier.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And so you will use Secret Courier as a main. Any Tappet Wise or anybody as a backup?
Yeah, maybe Tappet Wise as a backup.
Okay.
But yeah, I felt similarly. Secret Courier alone at the finish line.
Right. And then race number 10, we're both going to kind of concede it to Kitty's Queen, I guess. Maybe use some backups.
Yeah, I would probably use backups with the 3, 6, and like your 10, 3, 6, 10.
There you go. All right. Well, I will have this all written up so that anybody listening can follow along on the matrix, and we will we'll have that up later today, a little earlier than normal for some of the Sunday shows, which is a good thing. I appreciate you being able to get this done on Saturday. So while we have everybody, let's just touch on some of the stakes on Sunday. Nothing too in-depth. I don't know if you've had they drew the card on Monday, which is phenomenal. I love the early draws from every perspective. It's
I do too.
Yeah, they're very tough on me at Sam Houston, and they ask me to make the morning line on draw day. So hopefully they're not listening. I don't want to necessarily complain about a quasi-employer, but they give Rick a little bit more time at Lone Star, which is nice, especially in a card like this where you're dealing with horses coming from all over the place. Obviously, Nick's Go was supposed to be the headliner in the Steve Sexton Mile. He's going to go to the Metropolitan Handicap instead. I guess deputizing for him, so to speak, is Warrior's Charge in what looks like a pretty interesting race, and one that I don't think just simply boils down to the 3 favorites, but they do all look, of course, quite formidable.
I agree. And there is talks around the horse racing water cooler that by my standards, it's out. As of right now, it's just a rumor and talks around the water cooler, but that's what I'm hearing. By my standards is out, but I guess we can talk about the race as if he is in, obviously.
Well, I think he is. I think he's almost certainly going to be out because I'm noticing that he worked this morning. So he's definitely not. He worked this morning at Churchill. I don't know if they're rerouting him to somewhere else. But yeah, that seems safe to assume. And obviously, I'm friendly with the guys that own Warrior's Charge, the 10 Strike guys. And so they were obviously concerned about, I mean, they're horse owners, so they're concerned about everything when it comes to competition. But they were a little, you know, they thought that By My Standards was potentially going to be an obstacle. Well, that certainly makes things easier for Warrior's Charge. I guess my biggest opinion in this race, I don't know if you feel differently. I'm perfectly comfortable betting against CZ Rocket around 2 turns.
Me too. I definitely am too.
Yeah, this is a horse that early in his career looked like a very, very interesting prospect. Actually ended up going off nearly the favorite in the Malibu that was won by City of Light back in 2017. And when Alstall had him, he ran him really around a couple of different spots before he got claimed by Peter Miller. He's obviously made his name since then sprinting, and I think it's because he's just a more effective sprinter.
I agree. I mean, you probably have to use him on most tickets. But he will be a favorite that I will be trying to beat.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's a reasonable chance he's going to get bet down even more than he would have before. I suppose the pace should be decent enough with Warrior's Charge. Warrior's Charge is going. His connections kind of know that he only has one way to go. And I guess that'll put Hunk of Burning Love in a stalking spot. I suppose there's still a possibility that the two of them can kind of get on with it a little bit early. And that really would have led to By My Standards getting the best type of trip. But I guess in your opinion, or Silver Prospector a little bit dangerous? I loved Silver Prospector the day he won the Southwest. I went on Steve Bick's show that morning and said this was as excited as I had been about betting a horse in quite some time. He had a great trip. He barely won. You know, I kind of felt a little bit lucky, and he's just kind of been very average since then.
I think he's very dangerous in this spot because he, to me, he kind of gets some class relief. Like he is definitely ran against some heavy hitters. When you talk Mystic Guide, Silver State, who at Oaklawn was damn near unbeatable. Owendale, his horse beat Owendale a length and a quarter, two back in the Razorback. I mean, everyone would love Owendale in this race. So you're going to give me 6-1 on a horse who Steve Asmussen has had here for a while and has some works over the track. And he's going to get a little bit of a pace to run at. I mean, you obviously have to like some Silver Prospector.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think for exactly the reasons you laid out, this horse has been facing Silver State's going to the Met Mile. Express Train is in the Hollywood Gold Cup on Monday. Mystic Eye obviously won the Dubai World Cup. Over and over, he's faced top-notch competition. And I think that getting that inside post and being able to save some ground and then pop out if there's a little bit of pace in front of him could really, really benefit. And at least what we're thinking is that CZ Rocket is going to probably kind of start to hang at that point, going the distance of ground. In fairness, CZ Rocket has gone long before. Mm-hmm. He's gone around two turns three times. One was in an allowance race at Churchill. The other two were allowance optional claiming events at Oaklawn. He finished out of the money in two of them at Oaklawn. In the one at Churchill, he finished second beaten in neck in November of 2019. He got 104 buyer. So, I mean, he's a horse that's gone long. But the thing is, he was on the lead that day. And obviously, it's gonna help a horse stretching out in distance. He's not going to be on the lead in here. So, yeah, I think he's a favorite worth taking a swing against. Obviously, he's in large part he's in this race because he needs Lasix, and right. Anywhere else that he runs, he's not going to be afforded the opportunity.
And he's going to duck Nick's Go. He doesn't want any part of Nick's Go.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, they could have sent him to New York to run in the True North or the Met Mile, but yeah, I think Nick's Go being in there, Mischievous Alex as well, certainly scared some people away. So, fun spot. One other one that I wanted to talk about before we cut out was the Ouija Board Distaff, which is the 10th, and Laura's Lights, even money on the morning line. I don't know if you felt like there was going to be a bit of an alternative to her. It looks as if pace-wise, she's in a really, really good spot. I don't think anybody in here can keep up with her early.
I agree. And she drew perfectly. She's going to be on the rail. Peter Miller's coming in here with some shots. You know, he's been pointing for this day. So I think she will be the prohibitive favorite and a deserving one as well.
Yeah, I thought Raven's Cry ran really well at Sam Houston last time, but it was against a completely different brand of horse. Right. There was nobody. That was a new open company stake race that they ran towards the end of that meet. She was on top of a hot pace, took over first and kind of held sway going to the wire. I thought that she'd be the biggest threat to Laura's Light personally, both from a running style perspective and from top to bottom. So I said we would only talk about one more. Can't get out without at least mentioning the Texas Derby, some Kentucky Derby trail alums in this race, and actually a Kentucky Derby alum with Superstock coming back to the site of his maiden win last summer when he won one of the Texas Thoroughbred Futurities. Superstock obviously dropping in class, get her number coming out of the Arkansas Derby. This looks like a fun race.
It's definitely a fun race, and I've had this opinion for a while, and I'm going to stick with this opinion. I was on a couple podcasts earlier in this week, and I've said that anything out of the Arkansas Derby for me is kind of a toss. I mean, this is obviously not the Arkansas Derby, but I didn't like anything that came out of there. I mean, Hozier came back to get beat in an allowance race at Pimlico on Preakness weekend. We saw a Concert Tour run really badly in the Preakness. That race to me is kind of like it as if it never happened. So I liked a horse in this race at a price, and there might be a little bit too much pace, and he might not get the perfect pace that he wants, but second off a little layoff. I love this Dreamer's Disease. He's not going to see a 21-3 and a 43-3 fractions in this race. He's in a good spot. It's on the outside. He can kind of see where he wants to. He can just make his own trip. He gets first time Lasix. I like some Dreamer's Disease, especially at 12-1. His race at Keeneland where he beat Ultimate Badger. Ultimate Badger isn't a terrible horse, and he just handled him rather easily. If he gets a pace similar to that, maybe a little bit faster, this horse could be really tough at 12-1.
Yeah, very interesting angle there. I love. I'm a big time from US user, and this horse was on top of obviously a very. You don't need a pace figure to tell you how hot the pace was in the Pat Day Mile, and Dreamer's Disease was actively involved in it. So I think this is a pretty astute move on Diodoro's part, getting him back to two turns in a race where things probably won't be so high pressure early. The outside post is probably not as big a deal because you know the intention. I actually wonder if this horse is just faster than all of them and if he's going to go out and get the lead and try and lead them on a chase and maybe make guys like Cabrera and Ray Lou push hard out of the gate to keep him from getting over. Because if this horse clears, good luck catching him.
I agree. It could be a nightmare if he gets on the front by two and they're going a reasonable pace, especially on Lone Star's track, who tends to be speed favoring at times.
Right. We'll definitely see, of course, how things are shaping up early on the card Monday. Again, if you're out there listening and you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, come out and play some of the contests. There are some qualifiers Saturday and Sunday leading into the Monday contest. There's also slated to be a mandatory payout of the pick six on Monday, which is a sequence obviously dominated by stakes races. So we'll see. There should be, it's probably going to be $250,000 and they're in that range before things get started on Monday. So that's very exciting to see. And yeah, you'll certainly can find a lot of worse places to spend your Memorial Day. George, thanks so much for joining me. We will definitely do this again before the meet is up, and let everybody know where they can find you on Twitter or anywhere else in the general racing world.
Yeah. On Twitter, I'm Bryant_HRD. HRD is my podcast. It's Horse Racing Destination. You can find us on Twitter at Horse Racing D. And that's it. Yeah. I'm always on Twitter. I love that thing. Like this week, I do some stupid stuff. This week, for the pick five at Canterbury, I didn't have enough time to handicap it. There's like a $90,000 carryover. I just told everybody, send me your tickets and I'll play them. And if we hit them, we'll split them. You know, so I do some stupid stuff on Twitter. So follow me on Twitter.
There you go. Well, you might have an opportunity to get in a pool you otherwise wouldn't have been in by following George. We will do that and make sure we're on that. So again, thanks to my guest, George Bryant, everybody for listening to the Lone Star Park podcast. For our friends at Lone Star Park, who we're going to be excited to see on Monday, be sure to check back at inthemoneypodcast.com for the Monday show, in addition, of course, to the show every racing day focusing on the pick five. Again, we'll have that Monday show up probably sometime late on Sunday evening. So until next time, Nick Tamaro signing off. Best of luck.